She's seeing this disease from the inside out. I'm seeing it from the outside in. And the closer we can get to where our view looks the same, our perspective is the same, I think the better we can deal with things.
Hey everybody, Doc Brian here, and welcome to Doc Talks. We talk about people's troubles, trials, tribulations, and hopefully triumphs in life. Today we're in LifeWord Studios, broadcasting in 127 countries in over 175 languages to a potential listening audience of 2 billion people. You can find all of our content at lifeword.org. Today I have 2 people with me, John and Holly Merriweather, and we're just thankful for y'all being with us today. We're thankful for the work that you do here in the BMA with us, and you kind of have a unique circumstance that has come about, and won't you just tell us a little bit about what's going on in your lives?
Go right ahead.
You want me to share?
you may start.
Well, yeah. So, in short, 2 years ago, September 2024, we had been, we knew something was wrong. Took us a long time pursuing answers. And then in September, we were told that Holly, my wife, has early onset Alzheimer's disease, dementia. And I've told people many times, I don't know why that shocked us, because we knew something wasn't right. And yet, you still didn't necessarily expect to hear that for whatever reason. So we've been walking that journey now for almost 2 years, just figuring that out.
So something I would want to explain is that most of the time in health diagnoses, when the term early onset, that's not talking about the progression of the disease. Mm-hmm. It's talking about the age of the person.
That is correct.
How was there any family history of anything like this that you were aware of?
No, we get and the doctors asked that question. I mean, they were quick to ask the question, but no, there's not any that we are aware of. Not in close family line. Yeah. So I think for many reasons. So we don't have that history that we're aware of, and we haven't, really even walked this even from a distance with relatives before. So that makes this whole thing a surprise and brand new to us. Yeah.
So what was it like the day that you got that diagnosis? What kind of thoughts ran through your head?
I'm going to let Holly talk.
I don't remember. It's the wonderful gift in one way that you forget. But I'm told I have to ask, when was that? But it became very, everything, we changed everything. It changed everything. But God has been so very good, and I will lead with that, because although it can be horrendously painful and sad for other people, not necessarily us all the time, because we live with it and we're fine, and we certainly still love Him despite that. So, what was the question?
how did you feel?
Yeah. So this happens a lot.
I remember it a little bit more. So
he would be better.
We found out, what I say is, we found out the old-fashioned way, meaning in 2 years, the world of medicine has changed a lot when it comes to Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. People now are... there are blood tests that are available that were not available even 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. That's how fast things have changed. So a lot of people now are getting the genetic test. They're getting the blood test. They're seeing the markers. That is not how we found out. So we had to go through what I call the old clinical evaluation process. And so I think maybe that's why the diagnosis came on to us in that moment in such a shocking way, because – real quickly, here's how it unfolded. After 2 years of seeking answers, we finally got referred to a here in Arkansas. It's called the Arkansas Longevity Center in Little Rock. It's a center that specializes in longevity, cognitive-related issues run by geriatric MDs. And so we got an appointment based on a referral. That appointment started with a very short in-office neurological test, just a question and answer that a lot of people have gone through. There's terms for the test called the MoCA test mm-hmm. Or the SLUMS test. And based upon your performance on that test, Holly then was referred to a neuropsychologist. Mm-hmm. And the neuropsychologist then does a very extensive similar test, mm-hmm. but it's 4 hours in nature. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we were at the referral at this point. Holly had taken, I think the doctor there used the SLUMS, a little 30-point, 20-minute in-office Q&A. I sat through it. She didn't score very well on that. So she said, I do think this is worth deeper consideration. I'm going to refer you to a neuropsychologist. So we were at the neuropsychologist appointment, and I sat in for the first 15 or 20 minutes of that. I knew then things weren't going well, and a lot of that surprised me. And then I was dismissed, and he kept her in that appointment for the better part of 3 hours. Then he came out, the door was open, Holly was crying, and so I knew then things had not gone well. But we were there on a referral. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect to hear anything. Maybe that's why it was so shocking, because he was going to send his results back to our main doctor at the Longevity Center. But he set us both down, and he told us then, he said, listen, it's important, based off of what just happened, that y'all don't need to leave here with any sense of misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. And he was very adamant. He said, this is a very easy diagnosis. He said, Holly has absolutely got Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And began just – and so it just hit us a bit out of the blue, even though, I think that's why we weren't there that day expecting to hear, mm-hmm. oh, we know what's wrong. We were just going for another test. And I think Holly at that point was just – she was emotionally wrecked from just that that clinical test. And that ride home, I remember that, just kind of shell-shocked. Didn't really know how to process that. This is going to sound really odd to people. Holly, maybe she'll remember when I trigger by saying this, because I don't think we've talked about this since. Okay, this is silly. We stopped and got a soda on the way home. Mm. Holly wanted something to drink. Mm. So we stopped somewhere, got a fountain drink. And she just said, I don't think I can get out of the car. I said, that's fine, I'll go ahead and get something. I came back to the car, and she said, I've been seeing Jesus. Do you remember that? Yeah. And she said, she just said in that moment, again, this was 30 minutes after getting the diagnosis, she just said, he's going to be there for us. Mm-hmm. And now she's crying. Mm-hmm. She's hurting. Mm-hmm. She's distraught. But I'll never forget her saying that. Yeah. Again, that may sound, to some people, that may sound strange, but that's just what she said. That's what she felt she was experiencing. And we talked about it. I said, I believe it. And I believe you.
And that's how we live. Yeah. We live sent. tell other people about it.
Well, Scripture reminds us that he's a very present help in times of trouble. you referred to the old-fashioned way of diagnosis, where dementia and Alzheimer's was typically a diagnosis by exclusion, that we knew that it wasn't any of this other stuff, so it had to be this. Mm-hmm. There, as you said, genetic testing has come a long way just in the last couple of years. There are many different reasons why psychologists believe that this happens. Some things could be true and not true depending on circumstances. But what I found is there's not one cookie cutter answer, that everybody is different. My wife's grandmother had Alzheimer's for 16 years, and which is, you know, a long time. Mm-hmm. And we just had to learn the routine for her, you mm-hmm. know, and just had to sit with her. And, you know, there were certain things, like she would say, "I want to go home." Well, she was at home. But what we found was that meant she wanted to go to bed, mm-hmm. you know, and so there are things that as family, it's very difficult, but it's also difficult for the person who's suffering because they're trying to communicate something that nobody understands. Mm-hmm. How has this changed life in the home?
Mm-hmm. I can't drive. Something I wish that I could. But I find plenty of things to do. Taking care of my home, which now I can do. There are things that just don't come easy, of course. But I have a great support system. There's much love in our home, and I have an army, literally, of friends who prop me up, care for me. They have a little script of some kind, not script, but they have it's your turn to go see Holly, and that she wants to go here. And so it's just a support system of friends. And I can't tell you how. I mean, I say thank you all the time, and they're like, "Yeah, really. But next time we're going to do this." So it's just a beautiful thing. We all love the Lord. They understand me. I can make light of it. We say, you know, "Oh, that's just not even a blip on the radar screen, really." And I know that God has arranged it mm-hmm. in that way.
Yeah.
Mercifully.
Yeah. It's often difficult to let people step in and help. Especially when we feel like we've lost control. And community is so important, not just within a diagnosis, but prior to have that. Holly, what one thing do you have that is the most comforting, that, you know, if it feels like everything's spinning?
I'm looking for my Bible over here.
Yeah.
I never studied the Bible so much. And, I thought that I had forgotten it this morning, and but turns out I didn't. Yeah. And I don't know where that even that came. That just kind of came out of me. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say that I haven't. But I just keep repeating, He's been so good to me. And I've forgotten about that time when we were at the gas station. But I remembered it, which I often do not. And that's I'm glad that you remembered that. Yeah. It's comforting.
My wife's grandmother, she didn't know who any of the family was, but she knew who I was. She'd say, "There's that preacher." Mm-hmm. And that would hurt the family's feelings that she didn't remember her own daughter, you know, who was almost 60 years old, but she knew me, who she'd only knew for a couple of years. But she was a pianist, and she wouldn't remember where her piano was. She would say, "I don't remember these songs," but if you could get her started, she could play any song that you wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. She could sing every lyric.
Yeah. It's a crazy disease. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So there were moments of clarity when she used the creative side of her brain mm-hmm. as opposed to the technical side of her brain. Have you found that there are times where you do certain things that you're able to focus more and get tasks done if you're doing something?
That's an interesting question. I would have to think about that one.
Okay.
One of the things that when the neuropsychologist during that lengthy evaluation, he one of his points of emphasis relative to Holly, because every person's different. Like, you know, your grandmother was musical. Mm-hmm. You know, Holly, her background is she was an English major. She taught literature. She taught writing in particular at both the college and high school levels. And then she came to work at LifeWord here. And in the capacity here, it was all about writing stories, mm-hmm. right? So she's very the term that the psychologist used was that she has an extremely high verbal quotient. That mm-hmm. was his term. In other words, that's the deep well you're going to be able to, because that's just your nature. Words are who you are. You've noticed it in this interview.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a lot of verbal capacity. And so that is a lot of people on a casual basis, an interaction is a verbal interaction. And so that's her highest quotient area. And so a lot of people, you know, see, you know, that she's still got a lot of capacity relative to that. But you're right that it's the technical skills. So for her, like I've noticed, one of the things we've been talking about is we've been just like, you know, this opportunity to share her story. We've been looking for more opportunities to share her story. But the technical aspect still is a struggle. So if like literally handwriting, mm-hmm. we don't really handwrite anymore.
Mm-mm.
Or like she has a lot to say, but the formation of a story. So when she first got the diagnosis, she started journaling, and we're beginning to use those words from 2 years ago. Well, today she will try to journal, but it's she can't quite get what she wants to say mm-hmm. written out in a structure that she could have mm-hmm. even 2 years ago. And so the words are there, the thoughts are there, the heart is there. But to your point, that's a very good way of saying it. They use the term executive function. It's that technical capacity of the brain that just knows how to organize and to schedule and to execute, and even down to spatial awareness or hand-eye coordination elements and things like that that become increasing struggles.
So what are some things that you've done to try to cope with this? You know, if we're not able to write and you want to journal, are you trying to do like voice to text, you know, those kind of mm-hmm. things? Is there anything that you've tried to do to cope with these?
No, not in that sense. Because I think we're still kind of coping and transitioning and adjusting to even more basic elements than that. You know, one of the hardest, I know we're kind of all over the place here.
That's okay.
So, you asked Holly what some of the big adjustments have been. One of the hardest things for me has been, again, we're 2 years into this journey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not at the phase that you described with your grandmother. That may be a phase in our future. We're not there today. We haven't kind of progressed to that level yet, but we've progressed mm-hmm. a lot in 2 years. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me, the difficult thing has been how to navigate the change where she's got an element of independence and she wants that independence as much as possible. Mm-hmm. But then you see the struggle and you're mm-hmm. constantly asking yourself as the person that's there as her partner, where do I let that independence struggle itself to a conclusion? Where do I step in and offer help, and how do I do that in a way that doesn't deflate her or defeat her?
Yeah.
I would say that was the first year. That describes our first year the best I can in a short way. Mm-hmm. It was that constant understanding that, oh, this is becoming a struggle now. So do I jump in and help, or do I sit back and you know how you figure that in? Yeah. You make a lot of mistakes. Yeah. That's how you figure that out.
Yeah.
But I think we've kind of gotten there.
Eased out of that.
And we were the first year, again, things have changed a lot in year two. But in year one, we were able to sit down and really talk a lot about this. Mm-hmm. And, like, we had a lot of conversations. And I would ask her questions all the time, like, help me. Not because I just want to know. The more I can understand, you know, I describe it like this. It may not make sense.
She's seeing this disease from the inside out. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing it from the outside in.
Right.
And the closer we can get to where our view looks the same, our perspective is the same, I think the better we can deal with things. And so she's describing things from like inside the tornado. I'm describing things from outside that tornado, and it just looks very differently. Like she will say, well, I'm more than capable of doing that. And I will look and I will say, okay, I'm not seeing the same thing, right? And so that was a big adjustment. All of that to say, Holly mentioned driving. There was a point where I recognized she was no longer cooking. That wasn't a decision. We didn't sit down and say, you can't cook anymore. She just began to pull back. Mm-hmm. It's just like the journaling. It isn't a point of her saying, I can't do this anymore. She just pulls back. So she doesn't cook anymore now. And so I realized, oh, I've got to fill the gap. One of our bigger struggles that we finally had to reckon with was the inability to keep up with time and schedule. So we have worked through three different systems of awareness so that she, at any given point in time, at least knows what today is and what today's plans are, and at least can see the next couple of days. And we went through three processes on that. One was a calendar. One was just a whiteboard on our refrigerator. And now we have a digital calendar that I keep up to date the best I can. And it's just big and visible all the time in the kitchen. And that seems to have helped a lot. Now we're adjusting to other things like using appliances. And I'm saying this in front of her because it's been helpful for her not to talk through these changes, because at some point she has to get to a point of saying, I'm okay letting you do that.
It was an easy transition, though, it felt like.
Yeah, it didn't feel that way to me.
It didn't.
But we got there.
But there was no ugliness about it.
No. It was never that. It was just learning. It was a constant learning, and we're still learning every day.
But
that first year was very much a massive learning process. So now we've learned a lot. We still make mistakes every day, but we've come a long way. So, you know, now we're kind of coming back to, I think she's at a point where she wants to make sure she has an opportunity to say everything that she's always wanted to say about not the disease, but just about encouraging other people. And so we've actually just now begun to talk about, okay, so she tried to go back to journaling, and that's when I begin to realize she knows she has a lot she wants to say. She wants to tell her story. She wants to talk about people that's impacted her life and encourage other people to impact other people's lives. It's that kind of thing that she wants to get all of that out. And so it's probably going to be more like me letting her talk and just kind of dictating, whether that's capturing it via recorder or just typing out everything that she says. We haven't really worked through how we're going to do that yet, but we're trying. Yeah. We want to do it while we can.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Now, do you have children?
Three.
How are they? How are they handling this?
That's a concern, and I don't know how to, because the sadness that I feel, just it breaks my heart, and I don't know. We have three grown children, of course, and we don't talk about it, but
I think they process it based off their personality.
They're very different personalities.
They were the first people. In fact, at first we didn't tell anybody. They were the only people that we told, and the only reason we even told them was because they knew we were pursuing the answer. So they were aware we had this appointment, and so they were kind of looking. Well, how did it go? Well, so we ended up telling them, and each one of them responded based upon, in retrospect, just kind of their personalities
natural
led the way.
So even today, we have one who's she's a problem solver. Mm-hmm. So she looks at this very tactically, mm-hmm. right? We got problems to solve. Let's plan the future out. Let's get the routine in order. So she's just focused on, how we are going to deal with the reality. And that's been very helpful.
Boom, boom, boom.
Right. We have another one who, who's, you know, where Holly's been probably more, kind of her, what's the word I'm looking for? Who's been very dependent upon Holly. She's a mom. Holly has always been kind of her advocate, yeah. her coach, her counselor, her confidant, yeah. her. And she's much, much quieter, much more introverted, mm-hmm. and that's kind of how she's handling this. She's suppressing it. Mm-hmm. She doesn't really want to talk about it. I just need mom to be mm-hmm. mom. Mm-hmm. And she's come a long, long way. Mm-hmm. So she's had to overcome a lot of emotional angst because the person who she depended on mm-hmm. may not be the same person, yeah. and that's going to really impact me. And so that created – I don't mean that to be selfish. That's not – point. It was just, it created a very different emotional response by her. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and then our son is very different. He is the one who just wants to keep everybody on a very emotional, right? He's the one that's going to make us laugh when we need to laugh. Mm-hmm. He's the one that's going to not respond to, you know, he's not going to respond up or down. He's going to keep everybody, you know, hey, we're still together. We're still a family. We can still have fun, and so he's a very calming influence, and I think they just bring to the table how God's wired them.
Yeah,
it just but they all had to process that grief in their own way, mm-hmm. and you know, it took them a long time. Mm-hmm. It took them. Mm-hmm. I say a long time. I don't know what a long time is. It took a while to accept what we were hearing, yeah. to recognize that today's reality will not be tomorrow's reality, mm-hmm. that every day's changing. And how do we adjust as a family? How do we adjust as a couple? How do we adjust as a broader family? And so now I think everybody's kind of on board with this is a whole new journey, and we're now all a part of a new journey. So now we all have a role to play. And everybody's kind of found their role, but it took many months to get there. Yeah.
So, John, as a caregiver, you know, it's important for us to take care of ourselves. How do you manage that? How do you manage your time there?
I have a lot I want to say about caregiving. So I'm just going to take liberties to say a few things.
Since you've opened up,
you've opened up the yeah. caregiver the caregiver door.
And I don't mean caregiving in a negative connotation either.
No, I think it's important. I had my own grief to process through and my own adjustments to make. And we talked about the logistical adjustments, the when do I help, when do I set back, when, you know, how much independence, when, you know, just how to communicate through this together. I mean, all those things, okay? So you have to do all those things. That's all a part of caregiving. But mentally, if there are people out there that are in this role where you have a loved one, a spouse, a parent, I know it's going to be different. You have to contextualize it to your situation, but particularly in the spouse situation. One of the biggest mistakes that I made, in my opinion, was I jumped real quickly into caregiver mentality. And I have to say to myself very often, I am not her caregiver. I am her husband. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I signed up for this. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't take away the reality that, yes, I have to give care in a different way. I'm not trying to demean or minimize the reality of what it means to be their partner or their spouse. But mentally, for me, I jumped too quickly into I'm a caregiver, and I'll be honest with you, that hurt our relationship a lot. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, it's still something we're having to overcome. So I had to quickly say, no, back up. You are her husband. That never changes. Mm-hmm. Right? That's helped me. It may not help mm-hmm. anybody else, but that helped me. Doesn't mean I'm not having to play a caregiver role, but that leads me to point number two. It took me a while to get to a point of saying, what I'm doing for Holly now, Holly did for me and our family for 35 years. Mm-hmm. So now it's my turn to do for her what she's done for me all this time. Mm-hmm. So I refuse, it doesn't mean that there isn't a burden, but I refuse to see this as a burden. You know, she cooked all the meals. She drove our kids from eternity and back, right? She worked full time while she did it. She was constant chauffeur, constant errand runner, constant grocery shopper, constant cook, constant clean the house. Didn't mean I didn't do my share. I wasn't an absent husband. I'm not trying to say that. Okay, so now if she served me this way for so many years, there's a mentality of like I cannot let this be viewed as some type of a massive anchor. For me to have to serve her, that's not. I just can't. So it's a mentality. She served me. I'm serving her. That's just what God's asked us to do. That's our role.
I think that those things happened like that, and we didn't discuss it. I'll do the dishes. I'll do whatever now, and it's a beautiful. It was a beautiful thing the way it happened. It didn't involve an argument or any ugliness, or he just did that and I did that. And I don't know about you, but it worked well. It is working well. You know, it's a normal husband wife, you know, thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy, but no. You know, if you'd have told me 2 years ago, you know, hey, very soon this is what your life is going to look like. You know, your wife will never drive again. She'll never cook again.
What?
I don't know that I would have known how to handle it. And yet, as God does, He prepares and equips you to do what He's asking you to do. And I think that's kind of what Holly's saying. We didn't plan it out. You just adapt as you're forced to. Your question, how do you take care of yourself? I mean, there's a couple of things. You said something at some point earlier about, you know, community should start before the diagnosis, right? I mean, that's a part of living in the body of Christ is having that community. And I'm very fortunate that I've got some really close friends through a lot of discipleship that I've done as a participant and as a leader. And so I've got a really strong group of men that I meet with regularly. Practically speaking, we work out every day. We go to the gym or we go to the trail. We walk or go to the gym every day, 7 days a week. We get out, physically do exercise. She's got friends that take her, they go out to eat, they go on walks or hikes or shopping or whatever. And then I try to, honestly, I try to use those times. I like to journal. I like to write myself. And so writing is just a huge part of my processing and prayer time. Mm-hmm. So I have a prayer journal I write in pretty much every day. And I love going to the coffee shop for an hour. I love putting my headphones on, and I love to just write. And so the men in my life, which did not start with this, and that's your point, I think that's important. It didn't start here. They were there, and I'm thankful for that, because if this had happened 15 years ago, I wasn't there. But about 10 years ago, I really got involved in being intentional about allowing men to invest in my life and opening myself up to invest in others' men's life. And through that process, since I've started here at LifeWord and BMA Global, God has really kind of navigated both of our lives to where we have just a really strong, healthy network of community men and women, and we're thankful for that. But those are just some of the ways that I
kind of deal with it. You know, and the best thing about all this is that before we were ever even formed, he loved us, but he also knew. He knew, and he prepares us and equips us for these battles. You know, it's real easy, and I've seen this a lot of times, of where people will get this kind of diagnosis and they just give up. You know, they just go sit in their chair for the rest of their life. And I'm glad to see that you aren't doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, you've not just said, okay, this is the end, that you are being proactive about these things. So, you know, community is so important, and one of the struggles that I see is people allowing that community to come in and to help in the hard times. But it sounds like y'all aren't having a struggle with that you're allowing that community to come in.
Well, I think that we're kind of entering a phase where don't get on to me, okay, what I'm about to say, where we're going to need more help. Mm-hmm. And so far, the community has really given us an escape from the reality, mm-hmm. and I think there is a, you know, life is always just a series of transitions in one sense, and so a transition we're going to have to navigate is that transition to where we need them to come into the situation with us, mm-hmm. and literally help, and that's going to be really hard. I have a lot of people now that want to come in and actually, you know, help do things, help cook, help take care of the house, help mm-hmm. do the just the day to day things.
Sure.
If I'm being honest, we haven't really opened ourselves up to bring them into the middle of it as much as they're more of an escape from that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so it isn't that they don't ask. They do ask. Mm-hmm. And so far, our answer has been, no, it's okay. Mm-hmm. We can handle it. Okay, we can handle it. And that's, you know, we haven't gotten there yet. I keep telling myself, the situation will make itself more clear, but part of that may just be our willingness to be like, okay, it's okay, y'all can come in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I'm thankful that we do have those people that want to do that. And now it's up to, I think, you know, part of our journey is us getting there and letting them more inside,
yeah,
inside the wall, so to speak. It isn't, I mean, they know, they're aware of the disease, but yeah, we're going to need help. And we're going to have to be willing to let people serve. And sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. in our humanity, we like the idea of serving other people. For some reason, we have a difficult time letting other people serve yeah. us. And that's interesting, yeah. you know, just being honest. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Holly, if you could say one thing to our listeners mm-hmm. that maybe are facing this diagnosis or maybe have a loved one that is facing that, what hope would you give them?
I'm always going to default to Jesus. he means so very much more than I ever thought. Mm-hmm. And I think John even kind of talked about that, okay, really, I didn't know I needed him mm-hmm. that much.
Yeah.
And therefore, my Bible, where is it? You know, I need it more than ever, and I'm ashamed a little bit that I didn't go directly to the Bible immediately, or the part of my life where I was healthy. But again, I hate to be trite and just, but God really is so good, and. I used to say that in a just pat kind of way, but when you have something like this and you're looking towards painfulness, somehow he doesn't allow me to have a pity party. He does not allow me to get mad. Now, we were driving, and I kind of had a wah wah, mm-hmm. and then it went away. Mm-hmm. And that's what he does for me. Mm-hmm. And I can't believe it, that he would be so good as to do that.
Mm. Yeah.
So having your entire life turned upside down can be a great thing. Mm-hmm. And don't be scared of it.
Yeah.
I never thought that this would happen, but now I'm happy mm-hmm. that it did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. John, what would you say? What would your advice, what would your hope be to give?
For me, I guess a couple of things kind of come to mind. One of the things Holly and I have been talking more about recently, as we've been becoming more open and creating more platforms to kind of share with the desire that we do encourage, is, you know, I told Holly, I said, we need to be able to be specific about, so we say that God has been with us. How has he been with us? Mm-hmm. Can we come up with situations? Can we, and I think that the Bible, one of the things I've been reading a lot about, it's just been, I've been struck by, is mm-hmm. often that, you know, one of the ways that you are able to remain faithful in the storm is by remembering God's past faithfulness mm-hmm. and allowing that to kind of be a surge of wind to propel you through your current struggles. He was there then. So what Holly didn't say was our kids are triplets.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way.
And we have all, and I mean, and that's not, you know, yeah, that's interesting, but no, it was a situation where there were scenarios where we financially had no, absolutely no idea how we were going to make it. Mm-hmm. And I can't even look back and explain how we made it, quite honestly. We just did. Mm-hmm. And then you just build out your, you know, I just look back. And so I look back and say, you know, God was faithful here. He was faithful when I left my career to come to BMA Global. He's always met our needs. I can't even explain it how he did it, but he did. And so you kind of, you use God's past faithfulness. And then even as we walk this journey, there are specific situations where I could say, okay, well, that was a God thing. And I will give you one example. There are new infusion treatments for Alzheimer's. Many people are becoming, now they're becoming more commonly aware, and more people are on them because of the blood tests and the genetic tests and those kinds of things. Well, it was brand new when we got diagnosed. And so we were directed to get in the infusion program. And we went to Arkansas Medical Sciences, UAMS, and they wanted Holly to be in the program. But we kept running into hurdles, kept running into roadblocks. Won't even get into them. A year later, we're not on an infusion. I can't even know why. So we're sitting for a number of months, and I was scrolling one day online, and I saw an advertisement. Conway Regional Hospital now has an infusion center. What? The last discipleship group I led just so happened the CEO of Conway Regional was in my discipleship group. I called Matt. Matt. He said, yeah, John, it's been the most remarkable thing. He said, we started this about 6 months ago, and we are now the biggest infusion center in the state. Mm-hmm. I said, I had no idea. He goes, you probably wouldn't have had any idea because it's brand new. Mm-hmm. About 3 weeks later, we had an appointment. And I'm like, I didn't know this man from Adam. I didn't invite him to be in our discipleship group. Somebody else did. Mm-hmm. We became friends. Do I think that that was just coincidental? Mm-hmm. I do not think that was coincidental. Yeah. So Holly's on infusions today. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that we hadn't tried on our own. We were desperately trying to get in it. But this man was in our group. I just look at that and I say, listen, God's always been there before when there were problems that we didn't know how we were going to work through. He is navigating us in very real and tangible ways today. Mm-hmm. And I just think that we have to be able to stop and not just say that as kind of flippant God's yes. with us thing, yeah. but to stop and say, no, he was here. I mean, like, this was a situation that could have been really bad. Holly had a wreck when she was told she shouldn't drive. Mm-hmm. That could have been really bad. And it wasn't bad for the person that was hit or for Holly. And that has, you know, I mean, there's just such, so I just think we try to be very purposeful and not just generally saying that God is with us, but in really saying, man, he was there and he was there and he was there.
Yeah.
Yeah. He always has a way of showing up in yeah. our lives. And I think a lot of times we use that word coincidence when we should be saying, but God.
Yeah.
God led it all together. John Holly, thank you so much for being with us here today. I know that it's hard sometimes to share our story, but by sharing, we give other people hope. So thank you so much for being here with us today. Yeah. Of course, I'm Doc Brian. You can find all of my information at thedocbrian.com. Again, we're on LifeWord Studios today. You can find all of our Christian content at lifeword.org. Thank you so much for being here, and we'll see you soon. Goodbye.